Hello, ahlan wa sahlan, and welcome to another episode of Arab Voices coming to you from the studios of KPFT Houston since 2002. Houston's community station, 90.1 FM, FM HD1, Galveston 89.5 FM, and Huntsville 91.7 FM. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. This show is syndicated and it airs on dozens of radio stations in different US and European cities. During this episode of Arab Voices, episode number 1175, I will have a couple of segments. First, we will listen to the latest electronic intifada newscast covering the ongoing Israeli genocide, war crimes, and ethnic cleansing in occupied Palestine. During the second segment, I will air some of the remarks delivered at the emergency press conference held at the United States Capitol in Washington, D.C. on July 24, 2025, on the crisis in Gaza organized by Doctors Against Genocide, where participants, including Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, Palestinian author and poet Mus'ab Abu Toha, several doctors, nurses, and other medical professionals representing the Global Coalition of Healthcare Workers called on President Trump to end the forced starvation and killing fields in Gaza and demanded a shutdown of Gaza Humanitarian Foundation aid distribution death traps. Let's begin by listening to the latest electronic intifada newscast covering the ongoing Israeli genocide, war crimes, and ethnic cleansing in occupied Palestine.
This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 657 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. Israel has bombarded areas across Gaza this week, killing 646 Palestinians and injuring more than 3,400 between July 16th and July 23rd, according to records from the Ministry of Health in Gaza. On July 22nd, 15 Palestinians were killed and 50 were wounded when Israel targeted tents of displaced families in the Beach or Shati refugee camp west of Gaza City. The same day, another 15 Palestinians were killed, including six children, in an airstrike on a residential building in Beit Lahia in northern Gaza. The United Nations says that paramedics were also injured in that attack and that at least one ambulance was damaged as the residential building was located near an ambulance station. On July 21st, Israel bombed a kindergarten in the Burej refugee camp in central Gaza in two successive strikes. Images and video show small children streaming out of the classrooms with their backpacks on, their faces bloodied and terrified, being comforted by parents, teachers, and caregivers. Just a few days before, Israel bombed the Abu Helu school shelter in the Burej refugee camp. These attacks happened during a ground invasion of central Gaza this past week. On July 20th, according to a statement by the World Food Program, or WFP, their 25-truck convoy carrying vital food assistance crossed Zakim Crossing in northern Gaza and subsequently encountered large crowds of civilians anxiously waiting to access desperately needed food supplies. Quote, as the convoy approached, the surrounding crowd came under fire from Israeli tanks, snipers, and other gunfire, resulting in mass casualties, the WFP stated. The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza reported that 73 people had been killed and more than 150 were injured in the attack, some in critical condition. Dr. Mohammed Abu Salmiya, the director of Al-Shifa Hospital, stated that most of the injuries were in the head or chest and that the hospital was overwhelmed with the influx of casualties. Based on available reports, this appears to be the highest number of fatalities among Palestinians seeking food in a single location and on a single day since May 27th, the WFP stated. Forced displacement continues across Gaza, with the Israeli army squeezing Palestinians into smaller and smaller areas. A displacement order on Sunday, July 20th, covered four neighborhoods and nearly 6 square kilometers of Deir el-Balah. The UN said that their initial estimates indicate that between 50,000 and 80,000 people were in the area at the time the order was issued, including some 30,000 people sheltering in 57 displacement sites. At least 1,000 families had already fled the area. The newly designated displacement area includes several humanitarian warehouses, 4 primary health clinics, 4 medical points, and critical water infrastructure, the Southern Gaza Desalination Plant, 3 water wells, 1 water reservoir, 1 solid waste dumping site, and 1 wastewater pumping station. Any damage to this infrastructure will have life-threatening consequences, the UN added. With this latest order, the area of Gaza under displacement orders or within Israeli militarized zones has risen to 88%, leaving 2.1 million civilians squeezed into a fragmented 12% of the strip, where essential services have collapsed. The new order cuts through Deir al-Balah all the way to the Mediterranean Sea, further splintering the strip. It will limit the ability of the UN and our partners to move safely and effectively within Gaza, choking humanitarian access when it is needed most, the UN stated. In addition to relentless attacks on school shelters, homes, and buildings, services have stopped at 6 health facilities in the Gaza Strip due to a fuel shortage because of Israel's continued closure of the crossings since March. The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza described the ongoing obstruction of fuel and medical supplies as, quote, a deliberate attempt to destroy what remains of the health system. The United Nations says that hospitals in Gaza, quote, are overwhelmed and cannot cope with the influx of patients due to the lack of supplies and fuel. Local health authorities said that in the past few days, several of their health facilities have shut down due to the lack of fuel. More hospitals, including Al-Shifa, are at imminent risk of shutting down within the next few days. Israel's ongoing ban on fuel into Gaza has forced the main desalination plant in Gaza City to shut down. The Gaza municipality warned that the city has entered a phase of extreme thirst due to the lack of fuel to run the plant. In a statement, the municipality said that the worsening fuel crisis has further deepened the water shortage. Large areas are no longer receiving water, and most wells are out of service. Some 1.2 million displaced people and residents now face the threat of severe thirst as water sources collapse and urgent humanitarian intervention remains absent, the municipality stated. The Samir Project, a mutual aid organization in Gaza, warned that the drivers of the water distribution trucks they work with said that they are running out of gas and that, quote, in a week or two, mutual aid groups won't be able to deliver water trucks to people anymore. Israel's starvation of Gaza has hit catastrophic levels. Palestinians are reporting that there simply is no more food left, with markets empty and stockpiles depleted. Reporter Nahed Hajjaj posted on Friday, July 18th, quote, "Do not be surprised when we journalists stop covering news here. I swear by God that today I could not get up from the hunger. There is no food. Even if someone has money, there is nothing in the market to even purchase. We are all starving. We are all dying." On Sunday, July 20th, the Palestinian Health Ministry held a protest of sirens in what they say was an urgent warning and an alarm toward the deteriorating starvation and health situation in the besieged strip. Quote, "Our sirens today are the voice of the hungry and the bereaved who are left to die without the minimum means of survival," the ministry said. That was on July 20th. That day, the health ministry said that it had recorded 86 deaths from starvation, 76 children and 10 adults, what it is calling a silent massacre. The number has since risen to at least 101 as of Tuesday. Al Jazeera journalist Anas Al-Sharif broke down in tears describing the scene outside of a hospital on Sunday, where people were collapsing in hunger and others were being brought to the hospital with injuries from Israeli attacks. That was Anas Al-Sharif. He appealed to all international press freedom and human rights organizations on Wednesday over renewed threats against him by the Israeli military. He said, quote, I reaffirm that I, Anas al-Sharif, am a journalist with no political affiliations. My only mission is to report the truth from the ground, as it is, without bias. At a time when a deadly famine is ravaging Gaza, speaking the truth has become, in the eyes of the occupation, a threat. A group of journalists announced that they were going on hunger strike and would just be consuming salt water in protest of Israel's mass starvation policy and the deteriorating situation across Gaza. Our contributor Abu Bakr Abed wrote, quote, I had always been next to those journalists at Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir el-Balah. Seeing them drinking salted water has ripped my heart into pieces. There's no way this world can ever be forgiven. The group of journalists declared that, quote, we are on an open hunger strike until the smallest child in Gaza can eat. The reporters called on, quote, the free people of the world to stand up and participate in the empty stomach movement for the oppressed, the hungry, and the thirsty in the Gaza Strip. Members of Gaza's civil defense joined the hunger strike as well. Mahmoud Basal, the civil defense spokesperson, said, quote, the main reason that pushed me to go on a hunger strike is that I see children who cannot eat. I see men, women, patients who cannot feed themselves. The sick are unable to feed themselves, he said, adding that more than 1,000 people have been killed while looking for food, and 85 children have starved to death. We are living a daily catastrophe. People are falling to the ground. They faint out of exhaustion, out of hunger, out of starvation, he added. As long as aid does not enter for the citizens here in a humane manner, I continue to call upon and appeal to the world, Basal said in a post on social media. Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis stated that 15 more Palestinians died from starvation on Tuesday, bringing the total number to 101, including 80 children. The toll of martyrs due to hunger and malnutrition is increasing rapidly, the hospital said. Dr. Ambarine Salimi, an American doctor working inside the hospital, described the conditions in Gaza as catastrophic. Everything here is extremely cruel, she said. No food, no medicine, no shelter, no safety. Everything is lost under siege and a genocide war. 3-month-old Yahya al-Najjar died due to starvation this week, the third infant to be killed by Israel's starvation in a 24-hour period, according to journalist Ahmed al-Najjar. Israel continues to deliberately and systematically prevent the entry of baby formula and specialized nutritional supplements for infants. Dr. Fida al-Nadi at Nasser Medical Complex spoke to reporters about the death of babies from starvation.
Dr. at Nasser Medical Hospital, the last hospital working in the South Gaza, we lost a child, Yahya Najjar, who is 3 months old infant. We have lost him because of lack of nutrition, and he has no milk, and his mother could not afford breastfeeding for him. So we have lost him, and like all other children in Gaza. And the most vulnerable period is during the infancy, and early infancy is most vulnerable. Every day here in Nasser Medical Hospital, we lost children. Every day we lose from 1 to 2 cases of children, especially infants, due to malnutrition. And of course, it affects all aspects of their life. It affects immunity and makes them more vulnerable to infections and may die to infections. During the previous months, we have lost more than 73 cases of children due to malnutrition. And this number is increasing every day.
That was Dr. Fida al-Nadi at Nasser Medical Complex. The Lemkin Institute for Genocide Prevention stated on Monday that it was calling on every leader in the world, quote, to step in immediately with measures that ensure food and water gets into Gaza right now. No more discussions, meetings, reports, sessions, summits, the Institute said. Get food and water into Gaza now. Quote, even if it takes bypassing the reports, meetings, endless conferences, parliamentary sessions, UN sessions, and all the other regular diplomatic channels that have led nowhere, just do it. Reporter Wadia Abu al-Saud covered a protest of children in the streets on July 19th, marching with empty stomachs and chanting, no to hunger, no to death.
هذا صوت المكلومين والمجوعين والمعطشين. خرجوا الآن الأطفال ليجوبوا الشوارع في قطاع غزة ليحكوا للعالم.
They came out to the streets not to play, rather to scream out of hunger, Abu al-Saud says. Their bellies are empty, and their eyes are looking for a bite, for mercy, for a homeland whose children are not starving. Meanwhile, Israeli and American forces stationed at the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation sites continue to trap, injure, and kill starving Palestinians every day, while preventing the United Nations and its partner organizations from distributing life-saving food aid with dignity and safety, as thousands of tons of food remain blocked on the other side of the Israeli crossings. On Sunday, July 20th, Israeli forces killed at least 92 Palestinians who tried to obtain meager parcels of flour and food aid, in what Euromed Human Rights Monitor described as one of the most heinous massacres against starving civilians. Quote, the occupation army ordered the civilians to approach aid trucks with their hands raised, a clear sign of surrender, and then opened fire on them without provocation, the rights group said, adding that thousands of desperate civilians, driven by days of total flour shortages, headed early on Sunday to the Al-Waha area in northwest Gaza City, after reports circulated that flour-laden trucks had entered via the Zikim crossing. In a desperate attempt to feed their families, many individuals rushed to the site. When the first groups arrived, Israeli tanks were already stationed in the area. Soldiers then used loudspeakers to command, "Raise your hands and walk in front of the tanks. Those who want flour, come forward." Around 200 civilians complied. As they neared the aid trucks, Israeli forces suddenly opened heavy fire directly at their heads, instantly killing dozens. Others were left crawling, wounded, and bleeding. In a separate incident also on July 20th, Euromed said, quote, Israeli forces shot and killed six more starving civilians near a food distribution point run by the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation in Rafah as people attempted to access aid. On Wednesday, the Palestinian Health Ministry stated that 34 Palestinians were killed and more than 640 injured between Tuesday and Wednesday at these so-called aid distribution sites, raising the death toll to 1,060, with more than 7,200 injured since the GHF opened 8 weeks ago in late May. Dr. Nick Maynard, a British surgeon working in Gaza, told the BBC that based on the injuries he's treating, Israeli soldiers in Gaza are reportedly turning the targeting of Palestinian children into a systematic human hunting game.
I've seen, I think, probably a dozen now seriously injured young boys who have been shot in the abdomen or the chest. One of them, a 12-year-old, died on the operating table because the injuries were so severe. And they're all from gunshot wounds. And they all describe to me, and their families described to me, and indeed colleagues of mine, Gazan medical colleagues who are looking for food as well, have gone to these same distribution sites and witnessed these injuries as well. They're all describing that they're being shot by Israeli soldiers or by the quadcopters, the drones which are being remotely controlled by the Israelis, and fire, often indiscriminately, often targeted. And I'm seeing a very clear, we're all seeing a very clear pattern of injuries. I've seen the abdominal injuries, but my colleagues in the emergency room describe a very clear pattern where on particular days they'll see different body parts targeted. So on one day they'll all be abdominal gunshot wounds. On another day they'll all be head gunshot wounds or neck gunshot wounds. On another day they'll be arm or leg gunshot wounds. And on last Saturday, there were four young teenage boys all brought in very, very rapid in succession with gunshot wounds to their testicles. So they're clearly being targeted to their testicles. And this is a pattern that we're seeing every day, that these young teenage boys are systematically being targeted. And it's almost as if a game is being played, that they're deciding to shoot the head today and the neck tomorrow and the testicles the day after.
That was Dr. Nick Maynard working in Gaza. Meanwhile, an American mercenary who had worked for the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation admitted in an interview with Israel's Channel 12 this week that, quote, the aid centers treated the population very badly and put them in danger. The GHF system, quote, can't be fixed. It has to be put an end to, adding that if the UN had the resources and coordination that this mechanism has, it would work much better. The mercenary who recently resigned said that, quote, once Palestinians finished collecting the aid at the site, the American guards opened fire, shooting at them, at their legs, at the dirt mounds to force them to leave. He also described an incident where a GHF member of staff threw a stun grenade directly at a Palestinian woman who collapsed and fell to the floor. That was the moment I realized I couldn't go on, he said. In response to the confession, the Gaza government media office said on Wednesday that those statements, quote, represent damning testimony to the criminal and inhumane nature of this organization, which hides behind the guise of relief work while actually playing a security and military role in areas of forced displacement, subject to clear intelligence and security agendas. And if people manage to survive the GHF killing fields, the food parcels from the private U.S.-Israeli mercenary corporation continue to be wholly insufficient for people's critical needs. Dr. Ahmed Al-Fara, the director of pediatrics at Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis, said that Palestinian families have come to the hospital suffering from serious health problems linked to consuming spoiled food. Dr. Al-Fara told Al Jazeera that he asked two parents, quote, didn't you smell the foul odor of the can of food that you ate? The father said, doctor, what can we do? This is all we have. Al-Fara said that he wouldn't send his son to the GHF sites. Quote, I am afraid that he will go there and he will come back as a dead body. The GHF is a trap for killing, not for distributing food, he said. Turning to the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces killed three Palestinian children this week. On July 18th, 13-year-old Amr Ali Ahmed Kabha was shot in the back at least seven times by Israeli soldiers in Yabad, near Jenin in the north. Defense for Children International Palestine reports that two Israeli military vehicles came from the Mevo Dotan settlement and military base, entered the village, and took up positions in its northern area, where several soldiers exited their vehicles. Amr was walking around a road nearby, and he unknowingly approached the group of Israeli soldiers stationed at the site. Due to the circular bend in the road, the soldiers did not initially see him, nor was he aware of their presence. As Amr turned back and attempted to take cover, the soldiers opened fire on him with live ammunition from a distance of 10 meters, or about 33 feet away, and he was struck with around seven bullets. Three bullets in the back, one in the neck, one in the abdomen, one in the upper right thigh, and one in the groin. Amr fell to the ground as Israeli soldiers advanced toward him, preventing anyone from reaching him, including medical staff and ambulance teams. As news of Amr's injury quickly spread in the village, his father rushed directly to the scene. Despite the soldiers' shouting and warning shots, he managed to reach and embrace Amr. According to the father, Amr was still alive at that time, using hand gestures to plead for medical help as he was unable to speak. Israeli soldiers handcuffed the father behind his back, severely beat him, and was forced to sit beside his bleeding child. The soldiers continued to detain both father and son, blocking ambulance access for approximately 40 minutes. Only after the soldiers were certain Amr had died, they allowed the ambulance to approach and transport him to the Yabad Government Emergency Center and then transferred to Jenin Government Hospital, where he was pronounced dead on arrival. Defense for Children International Palestine reported on Tuesday, July 22nd, that another boy, 15-year-old Ibrahim Majid Ali Nasser, was shot and killed by Israeli forces in the Palestinian town of Kabatia, south of Jenin. Ibrahim was allegedly throwing stones at Israeli soldiers during an Israeli military incursion into Kabatia, where he was shot from a distance of about 10 to 15 meters, or about 30 to 50 feet, away, striking him with a bullet in the right side of the chest that exited through the right shoulder. And on Wednesday, Israeli forces shot and killed 14-year-old Ibrahim Imad Ahmed Mahmoud Hamran Araba, south of Jenin, killing him instantly. He is the 35th child to be shot and killed by Israeli forces in 2025, according to statistics from Defense for Children International. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight The Dreams We Carry During Genocide by Assem Al-Nabi, writing from Gaza. He's an engineer, a PhD researcher, and the spokesperson for the Gaza municipality. Assem writes, quote, "I'm not sure if I made a mistake promising my nieces and nephews something sweet in the middle of a famine. I searched Gaza City for days before I finally found a single bar of chocolate, hidden like a treasure in the ruins of this old city. I paid an outrageous price and brought it back, breaking it into 7 tiny pieces for the children, giving none to the adults. As each child took a piece, I imagined its sweetness on my tongue, wishing there had been more for the kids. A few minutes later, my beautiful 5-year-old niece, Lana, said quietly, 'Uncle Assem, do you know my dream?' I answered with curiosity, 'Please tell me, Lana.' 'My dream is to have a whole bar of chocolate,' little Lana said. For a moment, I couldn't respond. How has chocolate become a dream for a child in the 21st century? Why is it impossible to grant even this small wish? That moment stayed with me. And then I eventually realized Israel is the reason we and our children cannot fulfill even the simplest dreams. Not poverty, not fate, but occupation, siege, and war. Israel." That moment reminded me of another day during the genocide. I was standing on the street when I overheard children talking about their dreams, their small and innocent hopes if they survived. Some wanted to see their martyred siblings again. Others dreamed of eating hot bread or chicken. One little girl said she wished for running water in her bathroom so she wouldn't have to carry heavy buckets over long distances. All of these were basic human rights, things no child should have to wish for. But the voice that really hit me was from a little blonde boy who whispered, "I just want to hear my mother's voice calling me in the morning for school. That's my dream." I knelt beside him and asked gently, "Is that really your biggest dream, buddy?" He nodded and said, "It's an impossible dream. My school was destroyed and my mother was killed." I didn't know what to say until one of the children asked me, "Uncle, what's your dream?" I paused only for a second before replying, "My dream is for all your dreams to come true." Those are excerpts from The Dreams We Carry During Genocide by Assem Al-Nabi, writing from Gaza on electronicintifada.net. And finally, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Palestine and around the world. Photographer Hanin Salem captured an image of 4 young boys in Gaza City, taking a rest after playing. 2 of them have their rollerblades on and they smile for the camera. Hanin Salem says, quote, "As a photographer in Gaza, I constantly search for the life that insists on being born amidst all this death around me. My lens doesn't just capture destruction, it seeks out the flickers of humanity in the shadows, the child who survives the rubble with a smile, the laughter that hides behind the dust of bombed homes. In every corner of ash, there's a child turning debris into a playground, and an old bicycle into wings that fly him beyond the siege. They may not speak the language of philosophy, but they live its most complex truths with their bare feet, walking over shattered ground as if the earth hadn't bled, laughing in ways that defy the sorrow trying to nest in their hearts. In a single moment, destruction becomes the background, fear turns into a fading shadow, and life becomes a rusted bicycle ridden by a child who refuses to stop, as if teaching the world a lesson in survival. I asked one of them, 'Why do you play here?' He smiled and said, 'So we can laugh before the bombing starts again.' As if they know laughter is resistance, and that childhood, if not lived in its time, is buried with the first airstrike." That's from photographer Hanin Salem. You can find more of her exquisite photographs on her Instagram account at hanin.maher.salem. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.
You're listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston since 2002 and syndicated on other radio stations in different U.S. and European cities. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. On July 24, 2025, an emergency press conference was held at the United States Capitol in Washington, D.C. on the crisis in Gaza organized by Doctors Against Genocide. Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, Mus'ab Abu Toha, Palestinian writer and poet, and several doctors, nurses, and other medical professionals representing the Global Coalition of Healthcare Workers participated in the press conference and called on President Trump to end the forced starvation and killing fields in Gaza and demanded a shutdown of Gaza Humanitarian Foundation aid distribution death traps. I'm going to air some of the remarks delivered at that emergency press conference, and the voice you will hear first is that of Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib.
Thank you so much for Veterans for Peace, Doctors Against Genocide, Mus'ab Abu Toha, and all the human rights advocates for joining us today. As you all know, we're here because the Israeli apartheid regime is starving Gaza, and we need to act now. Using starvation as a weapon of war is a war crime. There is no denying it. The Israeli government is deliberately blocking food, medicine, fuel, and tents from entering Gaza. The entire population of Gaza, over 2.1 million people, is experiencing famine and disease. 500,000 Palestinians are facing catastrophic levels of starvation. We are watching it right now live. Children, where you can see their bones, their ribs, you can see their bodies shutting down. Thousands of them are children who are already again experiencing this. At least 113 Palestinians, I know it's more, and including 80 children, have already starved to death. Palestinians have been forced to eat grass, animal feed. I even saw an image of children licking just a little bit amount of flour in the back of a truck. Palestinians, again, have been sitting here waiting for food that is right over the border. Trucks carrying food and medicine supplies sitting there blocked again by the Israeli government from entering. Let me remind all of you the words of the Israeli finance minister, because it needs to be said. This is an Israeli minister who said, nobody will let us cause 2 million civilians to die of hunger, even though it might be justified and moral. Now, Israeli forces are deliberately shooting and starving Palestinians lining up for food. Over 1,000 murdered in the past 2 months alone, according to the UN. The so-called Gaza, quote, Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, a joke, inhumane, immoral. It's a deadly sham, a trap backed by the Israeli government and the Trump administration. The United Nations even calls it a death trap. The Israeli soldiers themselves have admitted themselves that they were ordered to deliberately shoot unarmed Palestinians that were just coming there, creating a killing field. This is illegitimate organization that Trump administration with the Israeli government, again, giving millions of dollars to them. And we say enough is enough. President Trump is refusing to enforce U.S. and international law by greenlighting the Israeli government and regime from, again, greenlighting the blockade of all the aid into Gaza and the slaughter of the Palestinian people while we go, again, around here in Congress to prove the delivery of more than 12 million in weapons during his 60 days in office. $12 million already. While Trump continues to push his disgusting illegal proposal to ethnically cleanse Gaza, he released a video saying that he's going to ethnically cleanse Gaza of 2 million Palestinians, the vast majority of voters oppose. And I say this because, forget voter, they're Americans of all different backgrounds that are saying, stop it. You know, this institution's not moving with the majority of their constituency. And it's shameful because if they poll their constituents, if you ask them, do they want another dime? They want us to continue to support the war crimes being committed in Gaza. They would tell you, hell no. Because they've seen the images we all have seen of babies being starved to bone. Every day that our government continues to withhold funding from UNRWA, they are actively participating in these crimes against humanity. Every day that our government continues to again fund this genocide, they're enabling more death and destruction. We must continue to push for a complete arms embargo of all weapons to the Israeli government. 7 out of 10 Democrats support an arms embargo. So again, no matter what weapons is, I don't care if it's offensive or defensive, whatever you call it, let's stop enabling, again, the genocide. The excuses I've heard will never justify these war crimes. It's past time that my colleagues stop making excuses and listen to the majority of Americans. As a girl that from Southwest Detroit, the most beautiful blackest city in the country, I can tell you, when I go home, they are telling us over and over again, what are y'all doing continuing to support this? We don't have clean drinking water, but yet we always seem to have funds to, again, bomb people, kill them, and destroy communities all around the world. And again, they continue to tell me how they see that we prioritize death and destruction. And you all know, I know many of my colleagues benefit personally and financially because they own stocks in war manufacturing industry. I watch it. Watch them press yes over and over again while they benefit from owning stocks in Lockheed Martin and all these war manufacturing industry. Shameful. Shameful that they continue to benefit from death. And shameful that they won't have the courage to stand up to special interest group and pro-genocide groups that are continuing to enable this because they support the ethnic cleansing. Listen to the people in the government of Israel. They are telling you that's exactly what they want to do. Stop excusing it. Stop pretending that's not what's happening. Again, they are luring people to the border to get food because they're so hungry. Many of them sending their own children. And they're coming back completely killed. And you watch, these bullets are in their heads and their bodies. It's intentional. And so again, I tell you, as the only Palestinian American serving in Congress, wake up, because the American people are selling you over and over again, we're not in support of this. So maybe for once, would you listen to your constituency? Pull them like you pull everything else. They will tell you they do not want one goddamn freaking dime going to starve a whole people or ethnically cleanse and continue this genocide. With that, I want to introduce Musab, who's an amazing poet and writer. But today I learned that he was a teacher and who loved his students. And it breaks me to tears to hear him talk about how he doesn't know where the whereabouts is, but how one of his favorite students was taken away so early. You know, Musab, I continue to tell my colleagues all the time, why is it that Palestinian children don't deserve to grow old? Why is it that you think there is disposable? Why is it that you don't understand a child is a child, no matter their ethnic background? Sometimes I wonder if they close their eyes and pretend they were Palestinians, if they would act. And so I know through art, through beautiful ways of trying through words of our pain, that we're trying again to move people with us. But I know, again, our country is moving. Even if the institution that's continuing to be broken behind us doesn't move, we're going to make them move. With that.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Representative Rashida Tlaib, for your words. In fact, I lost so many members of my family, over 50. Some of them are still under the rubble. I myself am a survivor of the genocide. I was abducted by the Israeli forces for 3 days. I am a father of an American citizen. We were in Gaza. Our house was bombed on October 28, 2023. And we were lucky because no one was inside the house. We already evacuated it. But we got no calls from anyone, not from the Americans, not from the Israelis, that they would bomb our house. Otherwise, I wouldn't be standing here. I lost so many of my students, Hatem, and Zanin and Harith Naim are just one of them, two of them. And I came here to talk about some of the latest news that I'm getting from Gaza. I just prepared this yesterday evening before I came here. On Sunday, 4 days ago, on Sunday, my father-in-law went to Beit Lahia with his son and nephew to wait for food arriving through the Zikim Erd crossing. Thousands had gathered, desperate for a lifeline. At 8:30 in the morning, an Israeli shell struck the crowd. My brother-in-law and his nephew were among the wounded. They were taken to the hospital, but doctors couldn't operate them until after some hours. When I video called them 2 days ago on Tuesday, I saw someone in the same hospital room with a leg amputated. I didn't recognize him at first. Then a neighbor passed the phone to him. It was Muayyad, my neighbor, pale and thin, a father of two, someone I used to play soccer with. Muayyad once ran a barbecue restaurant with his siblings. Israel destroyed his home, destroyed his restaurant, destroyed our neighborhood, destroyed our city. It killed members of our families, severed Muayyad's leg, and starved his entire family. Now his wife and two children are even more desperate, with Muayyad still in the hospital, unable to provide. He told me his leg might have been saved if there had been enough doctors. But the casualties were overwhelming. Too many, too urgent. That same morning, my second cousin, Ali Abu Toha, was shot in the abdomen while waiting for aid trucks. He didn't die immediately. It took an hour to get him to the hospital. Once admitted, his final words were, "Take care of my wife and five children." Ali was a father of five, aged 11, 9, 8, 5, and a year and a half. He wasn't the first loved one and relative I've lost. On October 13, 2023, an airstrike killed 31 members of my family, 18 children, 6 mothers, and 2 elderly were among them, and a disabled man, my first cousin's husband. Among them was my first cousin, Tahrir Abu Toha, and their 5 children, an entire family erased. On October 9, 2023, I lost my pregnant cousin, Dua al-Dabash. On October 22nd, my cousin Noor Ashantaf was killed along with her husband and their 3 children. Only one child survived. Another cousin was killed on October 18th, 2024, with 14 members of her family. My great aunt, whom I called Grandma, was among them. Her body is still under the rubble. Israel later razed that entire area. On January 17th, 2024, after more parents were killed returning home with bread, I wrote this poem. He left his house to buy some bread for his kids. News of his death made it home, but not the bread. No bread. Death sits to eat whoever remains of the kids. No need for a table. No need for bread. In recent weeks, my parents have left home for a pack of flour, and many parents have left home for bread but never returned. Some came back wounded or traumatized. Starvation isn't just about lack of food. It's about denying essential supplies, formula, diapers, medicine, equipment, fuel. Babies don't need flour, by the way. They need care. They need Israel to stop bombing hospital wards and family tents. They need the U.S. to stop sending more weapons, to stop vetoing UN resolutions calling for a ceasefire and release of hostages on both sides. They need the media to stop dehumanizing us. They need no one to defend their killers. Shame on those who do, while human rights groups, UN officials, and genocide scholars have already warned that Israel's actions may amount to genocide. What people in Gaza and all of Palestine need is an end to occupation and justice and accountability for all who enabled this, governments and media alike. It is shameful that I'm saying this 22 months into Israel's genocidal campaign, after Gaza has been flattened, after thousands have died, while the West Bank is also under attack. Just yesterday, the Israeli Knesset passed a non-binding resolution to support the annexation of the West Bank. It is shameful that I must say this after Israel has committed and continued to commit every crime imaginable, wiping out entire families, blocking aid, shooting civilians seeking food, abducting fishermen. Just yesterday, they abducted fishermen from the sea in Gaza, just a few meters into the sea, bombing mosques and churches and killing Muslims and Christians, killing medics and burying their bodies. They killed the medics and buried their bodies in Rafah, killing journalists and aid workers, committing crimes against humanity and justifying these war crimes. As a refugee, one of the most painful losses was the destruction of the Jabalia refugee camp, where my mother was born. The world has not only allowed a live stream genocide, but it has allowed generations of Palestinians to remain refugees. Now, 2 of Gaza's 8 refugee camps, Jabalia and Rafah, have been destroyed. It is shameful that I'm still saying this after 22 months of the genocide. It is shameful that the world has been watching this for 77 years. Thank you.
I really pray that God can give me the words so that when the leaders hear them today, their hearts are softened. Because for 22 months, I have been screaming as a conservative Christian to my Republican leaders to stop funding a genocide. But what I am witnessing this week, the forced starvation of babies. They are not allowing baby formula to reach babies. The level of evil that it takes to make a decision to starve a baby as a means of war, as a weapon of war. What have we come to as a humanity? What have we come to as a country where we are normalizing the blocking of food to a baby to force a political organization to change their mind? This is not political. I have identified as a Republican, conservative Christian my entire life, and I stand unequivocally in solidarity with Rashida Tlaib, the only Palestinian American in this office. Her people are being genocided. Her people are being starved. Enough! We have enough! The American people have spoken. And it is time for our leaders to listen. The people will only escalate until you listen. Lift the blockade on Gaza now. Feed these babies now.
That was U.S. Army veteran Josephine Gilbo. Let's continue listening to more remarks delivered at the press conference on the crisis in Gaza.
My name is Stacey Gilbert. I've worked in humanitarian assistance for almost 30 years, until I resigned from the State Department last year in protest of a State Department report to Congress that said Israel was not blocking aid. I had worked on that report, and I knew that was not the truth. But I want to give you a little bit of context here with all the things that you're hearing from my perspective as a humanitarian. I have never, in my 30 years working in this field, seen a situation where there has to be a category to enumerate the number of people regularly killed on their way to get humanitarian assistance. That has never happened. Also, when people talk about children starving, when you see these heartbreaking pictures, think about it. In your own family, if you're out camping, if you're on a trip, if there's not enough food, who eats first? It's not the adults, it's the children. If the children are starving, it's because there is no food left. I also want to say famine is not a foregone conclusion in a conflict. It only happens in modern times when aid is deliberately blocked. Think about that. I am calling on Trump to make a break with this policy that started under Joe Biden, this disastrous policy of unconditional military support for Israel. Make a break with that, with Biden's disastrous policy. I'm calling on my former colleagues at the State Department, DOD, the intelligence community, the National Security Council, to uphold your oath not only to the Constitution, but an unspoken oath to truth. And make sure you are not denying the reports that are coming in from the ground, that you put those in your reporting all the time. Regardless of who may delete it later, put it in. Make sure it is there. And I'm calling on all federal employees who still have a job in this administration. Now is not the time to be comfortable. Now is not the time to to fund your retirement account or your children's future college education. You need to put that money into organizations that are on the ground providing assistance to journalists who are on the ground reporting the truth, to advocacy organizations. Now is not the time to be comfortable or complicit or complacent. My mantra through all of this has been, evil wins when good people do nothing. I am calling on every single person to do something every single day to stop this. The tide is turning, I believe that, but it's not turning fast enough for the people who are dead and dying in Gaza. Thank you.
My name is Dr. Roxana Samimi. I'm an infectious disease physician. I will be sharing the account by a Gazan captive regarding Dr. Adnan Al-Burash. This was an account about his time at the Al-Fur prison area. The head of orthopedics at Gaza's Al-Shifa Hospital, Dr. Adnan Al-Burash, was working at Al-Auda, a hospital in northern Gaza, in December when he and other medics were arrested by the Israeli army for what they said was quote-unquote national security reasons. He was taken to the notorious Ofer prison. A captive at Israel's Ofer prison in the occupied West Bank told Sky News how Israeli forces left Dr. Adnan Al-Burash, who had previously been severely tortured, to die alone in agonizing pain and naked from the waist down in the prison's yard. He stated, and I quote, in mid-April 2024, Dr. Adnan Al-Burash arrived at Section 23 in Ofer prison. The prison guards brought Dr. Adnan Al-Burash into the section in a deplorable state. He had clearly been assaulted with injuries around his body. He was naked in the lower part of his body. The prison guards threw him in the middle of the yard and left him there. Dr. Adnan Al-Burash was unable to even stand up. One of the prisoners helped him and accompanied him to one of the rooms. A few minutes later, prisoners were heard screaming from the room, and they declared that Dr. Adnan Al-Burash was dead.
Hello, and assalamu alaikum. My name is Dr. Iman Husni. I'm a family doctor in the Northern Virginia area. My testimony is coming from Gid Qassam, Dr. Hossam Abu Safiya's lawyer. Dr. Hossam Abu Safiya, a pediatrician and the director of Kamal Adwan Hospital, was taken hostage on December 27, 2024, and is currently being held at the infamous Ofer prison. Gid Qassam, his lawyer, testifies that Dr. Abu Safiya has been held without charge for 7 months. His freedom is nowhere in sight. Cut off from the world and held in Israeli detention without charge, he has endured repeated beatings, prolonged solitary confinement, and medical neglect since his arrest in Gaza. The reason for his arrest, the Israeli army claimed, was that he had been involved in terrorist activity. 7 months later, Israel has still not presented any evidence to prove it. At the time of his arrest, he weighed around 213 pounds. In the first 2 months, he lost 44 pounds. By the time his lawyer met with him recently, it was clear he had lost close to 88 pounds. Dr. Abu Safiya spent almost a month in solitary confinement at Ofer before being transferred to a department with other detainees from Gaza. These cells are underground with no ventilation or natural light. The dampness is so intense that detainees feel cold even when the outside temperature exceeds 86 degrees Fahrenheit. The food that the prison provides is the bare minimum. They are being deliberately starved. Dr. Abu Safiya told his lawyer that his most recent assault by prison guards occurred on the 24th or 25th of June. She said that he was attacked brutally and savagely. The beating lasted around 30 minutes. There were bruises on his head, neck, and chest. After they were done, he asked to see a doctor. He wasn't feeling well and he was having chest pain. They refused his request. She says that this was maybe the fifth or sixth time he had been attacked, and they also broke his glasses. She said, I tried so hard to get him a new pair. because after he was arrested, when he was arrested, he didn't have his glasses. She finally managed to get him a pair in May, but when they beat him again, they shattered the lenses.
I'm John Ruhr, a retired emergency physician. I've been on the front lines of conflict zones on four continents, and I have never seen anything like what is happening in Gaza. Missiles and bombs designed to fight modern armored armies are being dropped on helpless civilians penned in a cage. And if that's not enough, now we have the barbaric medieval siege tactic of starving a population to induce submission. Unbelievable. But we're not here today as diplomats. We are doctors whose duty is not to power, but to preserve life. And so we are asking President Donald Trump and the 535 members that work in this building behind us for five immediate actions. One, open the crossings to Gaza for humanitarian aid.
Open it now.
Two, dismantling the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which, as you've heard, is nothing but a death trap dressed up as distribution centers. Three, unfettered access to food, fuel, medicine, and water to be distributed by the NGOs like World Food Program, the United Nations, and UNICEF, and Oxfam, organizations that have experience in delivering this without killing people.
Let the food in.
Four, international protection for humanitarian aid and humanitarian aid workers. And five, a permanent and complete ceasefire now.
Ceasefire now!
We're not asking for a miracle, we're demanding justice. Because genocide doesn't happen just in silence, it happens in bureaucracy, in delay, in neutral language from people that are powerful who should know better. So we're here to say no more. We will not stop. We will not be polite. We will not forget. Lift the siege. Feed the starving. Stop the killing now. Not another hour, not another child, not another bomb. Never again for anyone. For God's sake, people, reclaim our humanity. Thank you.
Thank you.
What you just heard were some of the remarks delivered at the emergency press conference on the crisis in Gaza held at the United States Capitol in Washington, D.C. on July 24, 2025, organized by Doctors Against Genocide. You've been listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston since 2002 and syndicated on other radio stations in different cities in the U.S. and Europe. Our shows are archived online, and you can listen to them by visiting arabvoices.net. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.